Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're broadcasting this week from the Lost My Woman, My Dog, and My Cable TV Service Department here at Car Talk Plus.
Or otherwise, the worst country song titles, which came from a website called The Worst Country Song Titles. And I think they're not the worst. These are the absolute best. Oh, I'm going to give you a couple of titles. We've done this before, and I always like all my exes live in Texas and stuff like that. But this list, man, I'm going to just give you a smattering. I gave her my heart and a diamond, and she clubbed me with a spade. How did you get so ugly overnight? Mama, get the hammer. There's a fly on Papa's head. I'd rather pass a kidney stone than another night with you. I would have wrote you a letter, but I couldn't spell yuck. I'll give you just a couple of more. How about this one? My phone ain't been ringing, so I guess it wasn't you. Oh, man. And everyone knows Drop Kick Me Jesus to the Goalpost of Life.
Of course.
And one of my real favorites, they may put me in prison, but they can't stop my face from breaking out. These are beauties. Absolutely beauties.
I'd rather pass a kidney stone than another night with you.
And now, these are not made up because this guy has, in many cases, the author of the song and who has performed it.
Oh, no, I'm sure.
So this is real stuff, man. This is reality radio.
You just don't watch enough country music television, man. Anyway.
We live in the wrong part of the country.
Absolutely.
Most Texans are having too much fun.
Yeah, and we're not.
We're not.
If you have a question about your car or anything else, the number to call is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Aloha, this is Jeff from Maui.
Aloha to you, Jeff. Oh, man.
What's the weather like in Boston?
Oh, shut up! So how long have you been in Maui?
7 years.
And?
And I have a 1987.
No, but you love it?
You know, it's like a doorstop, and it's reliable. It's boring.
Really?
I have a motorcycle. It's a lot
and
more
entertaining. And it's boring. See that? See that, Tommy? What'd you say?
No, he's talking about his car. He's not talking about Maui.
No, forget your car. We're not interested in your car.
Oh, okay.
What about Maui?
Maui. Maui's fantastic.
And do you take it for granted, or every morning do you wake up singing, zippity-doo-dah, zippity-yay?
Well, you know what? That I woke up to bird singing this morning, which is the way I wake up every morning.
Yeah.
You know, doves and honey creepers, and it's just spectacular. It's sunny, it's warm.
My brother wakes up and the birds are buzzards. Says circling his cars. So what do you, I hate to get off the topic if there were one. But what do you do for a living there?
Two things: freelance condominium management, and I teach relationship skills workshops with my partner, Deborah.
Oh, relationships! Oh my God, do we ever need you? You mean there are skills involved?
Yeah, give us something that you think we might be lacking in that would help in our relationships with our wives.
Yeah, give us one little trick that we could use, like when we get home tonight.
Okay.
That will cement our relationship.
Don't ever use the word cement.
No, cement's a not bad, if you're Italian.
Has bad connotations. Cement overshoes, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there must be some little things, you know, tricks. We want to fool them.
Okay, I'll give you something straightforward. It's called empathic shared meaning.
Yeah.
And all it's really about is listening. Listening to what she's saying and the words behind, or the music behind her words, so you get the feeling aspect. You can actually drop into her experience as though you were in her shoes saying, okay, I'm standing in Filene's basement and...
Okay, what kind of a car you got?
Ha 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 ha
That isn't going to work.
That was better than the question I was going to ask. And I was trying to figure out how to ask it. What kind of a car do you have, Jeff?
Oh, well, my part, she has an 87 Saab 900.
Oh, Deborah has.
Yes. And being somewhat mechanically inclined, I said, okay, I'm going to do the service on it. So what I did was I flushed out the old brake fluid, got rid of the primordial ooze that was in the reservoir, mm-hmm. put in fresh fluid, bled the brakes, got all the air out, everything was ducky. Then we took a long drive on Maui is about 14 miles, mm-hmm. and we parked the car. We got in the car when it was hot, and the brake pedal would go to the floor. Pump the brake a couple of times, and it would be fine. Drive back home again, and every time that the car gets hot or we let it sit in the hot parking lot, get back in it again, the pedal will sink. The rest of the time, it's fine, which is about 90% of the time.
Sounds like you didn't bleed it correctly.
No. I mean, if you can get into it right now with the engine cold, the car not having run for a while, mm-hmm. and the brake pedal, and drive it, and the brake pedal is fine.
Absolutely.
You can continue to drive it. And while you drive it, and every time you use the brake pedal is fine.
That's right.
It's only when you let it sit for a while that the thing fails you.
Right. When it sits, after it's been driven, and it sits and it gets hot, then it starts to sink.
Well, I mean, so you don't think it's got air?
No, I don't.
It doesn't have air because I've gone back and rebled it.
See, he's going to tell you that it needs a master cylinder.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you it needs a master cylinder.
Really?
I condemn the master cylinder, I'm going to ask you to check to verify that none of the calipers is sticking.
Okay.
You could have a faulty caliper causing the brake fluid to boil. That could cause loss of brakes. But why would
but
come
why
on the
that would happen after you change the brake fluid doesn't make sense.
Well, that's why my brother believes that you've got air in the system, but I know you don't.
Absolutely.
I'm going to stick with my original belief that it's the master cylinder.
I don't like it.
And why it just happened? This is a penalty you're paying for living in Maui.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
This is your penance. Yeah. And if that's what it costs you to live in Maui, pay up.
Make sure, don't get hurt. I mean, make sure that they work before you go doing anything crazy.
I understand.
Say it, Jeff. Thanks for your call. Thanks for your sound words of advice, whatever they were. And good luck with your car.
Thank you. Aloha.
See you later.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, this is Edwina.
Hi, Edwina. Where are you from?
I'm from Michigan, but I'm in Springfield, Missouri right now.
Well, we're going to... But
are you visiting Springfield, Missouri?
I just picked up a load here, and I'm taking it to Far, Texas.
Are you a trucker?
Yep.
Really?
An over-the-road trucker?
Yes, sir.
And what did you pick up? Like hogs?
I can't say.
Contraband, huh?
It's contraband, that's it.
Is it Cuban cigars?
And if it is Cuban cigars, any chance a few of them could fall off the truck?
No, actually, auto parts.
Auto parts. So you're in Springfield, Missouri, and you're heading to Texas.
Far, Texas. Farr.
Wow.
No kidding, Far. Got trouble with your rig? How's that, huh?
Yeah, it's good.
That was good. Got to keep that safe and good. It's the 75 old Delta 88 Royale that I have at home. When I start it, it blows a blue-gray smoke so thick it looks like I'm making clouds.
Oh.
So this thing must have like a 350 engine, right?
Yeah.
Great engine.
These were magnificent.
Burn oil like mad.
Yeah, in fact, they burned almost as much oil as they burned gas.
Would this have anything to do with the fact that for a while there it wasn't starting?
No. You were lucky it wasn't starting. You weren't burning any oil when it wasn't starting.
Well, here's what I would try. Have somebody pull off the valve covers.
Okay.
And they can see if the valve guide seals have disintegrated.
Okay.
And if you're really lucky, they can replace the valve guide seals and the smoke will go away.
Okay.
That would be good. The other possibility is that the rings that are around the pistons that are supposed to keep the oil out
are stuck.
They're stuck.
Now, you can if the valve guide thing doesn't work, you can try one of the tricks that we tried on one of my brother's jalopy before he had
to
junk it.
Don't even suggest it.
You drain out half the motor oil. And
okay.
You fill up the crankcase now with the motor oil that's remained in there and 2.5 quarts of kerosene.
No.
Hey, well, this is a last-ditch effort here.
And we want you to know, it didn't work for my engine.
Okay.
The idea being that the kerosene being so watery will penetrate the varnishes that are holding those oil control rings stuck and free them up. It'll free you.
Okay.
Winter.
It sounds like such a great theory, and we fell for it.
And when you get to that point, you really have nothing to lose.
Right. Because
if it doesn't work, then you have to rebuild the engine.
Right.
Okay.
So you don't want to do this until you have someone take a really good look at the valve guide seals, because if it is the valve guide seals, you're going to be home almost free.
Okay.
Hey, you pronounce your name Edwina.
Edwina, yes, sir.
Don't some people pronounce it Edwina?
Yeah, they do.
I like Edwina better.
No, but if you didn't have the A, your name would be Edwin. It wouldn't be Edween.
No, but I'm saying some people pronounce it the other way.
Well, they clearly are mispronouncing it.
They can pronounce their names any damn way they want. It's their names.
No, you can't.
Erasmo. What is your new name, by the way?
Erasmo.
Erasmo, that's it.
That's my new name.
Hey, Edwina, well, thanks a million for calling.
Hey, and thank you for all these suggestions. I'll try them.
How far is far?
Far is about a day and a half, 2-day drive from Springfield.
Far is about a day and a half. Man,
yeah.
That's a title of a book if I ever heard one.
There you go. Far is a day and a half.
See you later.
Okay, have a good day. Thanks a lot.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Far is about a day and a half.
I can see you working on it. I can see those wheels turning. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Ethan from Leavenworth, Washington.
Hi, Ethan.
Ethan, Leavenworth. Gee, I got a cousin there. Oh, that's Kansas. Where are you? Leavenworth where?
Washington.
Washington.
I didn't know there was a Leavenworth, Washington.
Well, we know now.
So what's happening, Ethan?
Well, I've got an 85 Volvo with a 6-cylinder turbo diesel engine in it.
Oh, God.
Mm-hmm. Oh, don't say that.
Well, I mean, what a silly thing that is. Come on.
Well, I've got a problem with it. It has no power going up hills at all. I can't get above 30 miles an hour, even up the slightest incline.
Oh.
And when I do, it's spitting out a whole bunch of black smoke and just making awful noises.
What kind of noises?
Well...
So you said you had a problem. Can we get right to it?
Well, that's the problem.
What do you got, like 500,000 miles on this car?
No, close, it's only got 150,000 miles on it.
Oh, stop it.
Yeah, get out.
Come on.
No, really?
Nah.
Did you buy it new?
I bought it used.
Why? What made you go to the diesel?
It was cheap.
Well, it was a good price, and it got great gas mileage, and my parents have had a diesel Suburban before.
I know it's a genetic thing. Yeah.
No matter how hard you try, your kids always end up doing stupid things just like you did.
Well, my dad actually helped me buy it.
So.
There you go. So he gave it his seal of approval.
Right.
But how long have you owned it?
I've owned it for about 3 years now.
And how many miles did it have on it when you bought it?
95,000.
And did you buy it from the original owner?
No, I bought it from a used car dealer.
Oh, can you imagine the party that they must have thrown when they unloaded this beast?
You guys aren't making me feel
Can you imagine?
Too happy, right?
Well, I mean, I'm questioning the mileage. I mean, if whatever miles you put on it, it means that when you bought it, the thing had been driven like 6,000 or 7,000 miles a year. I mean, that's not a lot of miles. That's very, very low mileage.
And the thing is, it would be incongruous with a diesel.
Exactly.
Why
would you buy a diesel
if you were driving 6,000 miles a year?
Right. I mean, you could pay $5 a gallon for gasoline. What would you care? So I think that dealer turned back the odometer.
You do.
And I think this car has got 400,000 miles on it.
Okay.
Because in which case it needs...
The answer we're going to give you won't fit if it's only got 150,000 miles.
Yeah, we think it needs the engine rebuilt. It's got low compression.
You think the whole engine needs to be rebuilt?
Maybe.
Okay, I've talked to a couple mechanics.
Yeah,
They've suggested that it could be a fuel injection timing problem.
It could be.
Or a fuel injector blockage.
Well, the fuel distributor on this thing, I guess is what you'd call it, or the fuel injection pump, is driven by the timing belt.
Uh-huh.
And it's possible that it's jumped time.
Right.
And if that's the case, and it's injecting the fuel at the wrong time,
right,
it could give you exactly the condition that you have, low power, black smoke. Similarly, low compression could give you that symptom.
Right.
So you need to have, the first thing to do is you start from square one.
Do a compression test.
You need
test.
A compression test done, but you can't do it yourself because you don't have the gauge.
Right.
And I think you're going to find that you don't have compression.
Okay.
That's what I think, because I think that this thing's got far more miles on it than the odometer suggests.
All right.
I wish you the very, very best, Ethan.
Well, thanks a lot for your help, you guys. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for calling.
See you later.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, look, do you happen to remember last week's puzzler?
Oh, come on. That's such an open-ended question. Can't you make it like multiple choice or something?
All right. Here are your choices. You ready?
Yeah.
A, yes, I remember the puzzler. Or B, no, I'm a knucklehead.
I'll take B.
I thought so. But it was a geographical puzzler about a guy driving from state to state, and we'll have the answer along with more of your calls in just a minute.
So please stay tuned.
Everybody sings about the fastest cars, like a little deuce coupe with a flathead mill. But you shouldn't drive fast in the neighborhood. And what's so cool about scoops on a hood? Squealing at the lights sounds so damn great. When the cops don't see you do it, well, before it starts, I want to stop the bleeding. My safe car was made in Sweden. Go, little Volvo. You got a fortified dash. Go, little Volvo. You're good in a crash. Go, little Volvo.
And even though NPR's structural engineer looks both ways, then pulls out the I-beam under our studio whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Discover. Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year automatically, with no limit on how much you can earn. It's amazing because of all the places where Discover is accepted. 99% of places in the U.S. that take credit cards. So when it comes to Discover, get used to hearing yes more often. Learn more at discover.com/match. 2021 Nilson Report, limitations apply. Support for NPR and the following message come from Culturelle. IBS symptoms can be tough to manage with diet alone. Culturelle IBS Complete Support is a medical food for the dietary management of IBS, designed to relieve the intensity and reduce the frequency of severe digestive symptoms associated with all IBS subtypes. Save 20% on IBS Complete Support with promo code RADIO on Culturelle.com, or for occasional digestive issues, try Culturelle probiotic supplements.
An internal investigation found that a cop with the California Highway Patrol sexually harassed 21 women. But those findings were kept secret until a new state transparency law passed. We dug through hours of tapes to find out what happens to officers who cross the line. Listen to On Our Watch, a podcast from NPR and KQED.
Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and, of course, the answer to last week's puzzle, which I got to admit, I forgot at one point during the week.
I was going to just interrupt you because I think people should know that the other day my brother says to me, what was last week's puzzle? I said, wait, it's too early for you to ask me that. And he said, no, I don't remember.
I didn't. And who do I call? I call my knucklehead brother. I mean, I could have called anyone else. Why would I call you?
I hate to tell you, but do you know who remembered it? I didn't remember it.
Duh.
You ready for this?
Yeah, your parakeet?
Louis Cronin.
Really? Wow.
Louis Cronin, who can't remember where she left her pocketbook.
I remember the puzzler.
I remember the puzzler.
Oh, David Fetter, the answer? Okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
David told her.
Yeah, Rain Man remembered it. Oh, gee, what a crew. Anyway, this is submitted by a fellow named Dennis Michaud from a local outfit called MathWorks, and I describe it as a geomathematical puzzler, and here it is. The company that Bobo works for just finished a new product, and they wanted to promote it across the country, so Bobo was asked to travel by car to each of the 48 contiguous U.S. states, i.e. the lower 48, to promote the product. He was told that he could visit each state in whatever order he chose, but the company wanted him to start in Delaware at their headquarters, naturally. And, you know, they're one of those sleazy companies that's incorporated in Delaware where there are no laws. Anyway, they also asked that he visit each state only once. You got it? He can't go back. So Bobo sat down at his desk and began to plan his trip. He was playing around with various routes he could take, and at that moment, his boss stopped by and said, "Hey, I'm going to join you when you reach your last state. I was born there, and I've been looking for an excuse to go back and visit. You can leave your rental car there, and I'll fly you back in my private jet." Bobo says, "Great," trying to cover up the fact that even he hadn't figured out his route yet, and he had no idea how his boss knew it. So the question is, how did his boss know which state Bobo would end his trip in, and which state is it? He's starting off in Delaware. He hits every state, but every state only once.
Yeah, this is a good one, man.
And he winds up in the one state that borders only one other state. So if you were to go into this state at any other time...
I know what it is.
You couldn't get out.
Alabama.
You couldn't be... You almost couldn't be farther away. They wind up in the great state of Maine, which only borders New Hampshire and, of course, Canada.
And the Atlantic Ocean.
In the Atlantic Ocean. Now, who's our winner, Tommy?
The winner is Pam Clayton from Monroe Township, New Jersey. And for having her answer selected at random from among all the correct answers that we got, Pam is going to get a $26 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division at CarTalk.com. And there, she can order our CD called Maternal Combustion, Calls About Moms and Cars, featuring, among other stars, my mother.
Your mother's on this CD?
Yeah.
So's my mother. I mean, what are the chances of that?
This is a collection of calls that all relate to mothers, child-rearing, escaping from the scourge of the minivan.
In other words, everything the modern mother faces today.
Exactly.
Sounds like a deal to me. Anyway, we have a brand new... actually, this is kind of a little automotive. It's automotive, historic, and folkloric, and it's got a lot of different stuff going on.
I like historic and folkloric. Those are good.
You'll like it. Yeah, maybe give you a shot of remembering it. Anyway, that'll be coming up in the third half of the show today. So hang in there. In the meantime, if you have a question about your car or anything else, give us a call. The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Inga.
Inga.
Inga. Where are you from?
I'm from Weston, Massachusetts.
How far western? You mean like Pennsylvania?
No, Weston, T-O-N.
Weston.
Right.
Oh, Weston, Massachusetts.
Weston. I'll take the first way.
Oh,
Weston.
I'm sorry.
Weston.
Weston.
Right.
Yes,
yeah.
We maybe even know where that is.
I know where it is, certainly. Yeah.
I drive an 88 Toyota Tercel.
Oh, you must be one of the poor Westonites.
I knew that was going to be a comment like that, but that's all right. I was prepared. However, I'm not sure I'm such a smart driver. This last winter, I went to another suburb and had to park on a very steep hill. And it was a very cold day. And the only place I could park, I was either going to point up or point down, and I chose to park as near to the house that I was going to as possible, and that was at the top of a steep hill pointing down, okay?
Got it. Sure.
And I made some decisions which turned out not to be very smart. The first decision I made was not to use the emergency brake because in the past I've had one freeze on me because I was going to be there quite a long time.
That was not a good decision,
Not
Inga.
A good decision. Well, it was also not fun having a frozen emergency brake the other time. But anyway, that was number one. The second one was, since the curb was somewhat broken and my tires were new, I didn't want to turn the wheel totally.
Inga, this is getting better by the minute.
I really didn't want punched tires when I was...
Sure, that's right. So you made sure the tires were facing nice and straight ahead.
Just a little bit towards the curb, but not actually into the curb.
Sure.
We've got it.
Okay. The next thing that happened...
Now, let me guess. The next thing...
You left it neutral.
You didn't want to wear out the transmissions. You left it neutral.
No. This is where I thought I was making a smart decision. I put it in reverse.
Yeah,
that was correct.
That was correct.
That's the only one so far of the decisions that was good.
Okay, then I went in the house, and about 20 minutes later, somebody came barreling to the front door and pounded on the door and said, "Your car is lurching down the down the hill.
Exactly.
Well, what it did was lurch
and
take
stop.
A rest for about 5 minutes.
And then lurch.
And then lurch again.
Sure.
Okay. What the controversy that's ensued is that I've been told on various occasions that, number one, the car should not be left in gear at all, ever. It should be left in neutral, and the emergency brake should
be put
on.
Okay, now tell us who gave you all these different pieces of advice so we can know who to castigate severely. Number one,
well,
neutral.
Was this
your husband?
Drive. No. It was just another driver, and I'm
a relative?
What?
Was it a relative?
No,
Someone you can't name and humiliate.
I don't want to, because I also have to defend him and say that he says when you're parallel parking, he has been told always to park in neutral in case somebody bumps you, and then that way you don't ruin the...
We'll address that issue later.
Okay, so that's number one. Leave it in neutral.
Number two, somebody who does know something about cars, and I still don't want to humiliate him, said you should always leave the car in first gear if you're pointing, if you're on a hill, whether you're going down or up, because the gears are smaller, and therefore you have a better locking situation than if you're in reverse.
Well, strike two.
That person is on the right track. The logic is right, but the information is wrong.
It's strike two anyway. Okay, number three.
Number three is only that the question arose whether it's a parking brake or an emergency brake, because I was told that I was an idiot not to pull on the parking brake, and
yes.
I said I thought it was an emergency
brake. No, they no longer call them emergency brakes because they don't work very well in emergencies, so they had to rename them.
Right.
Uh-huh.
They used to work relatively well in emergencies, but only relatively because the other brakes worked so poorly. But it ceased to be an emergency brake about 1920.
Right, that nomenclature
probably
arose.
I was just driving at that point.
Yeah,
right.
Those Conestoga wagons that went west with Ward
right.
Bond. What was that show?
But when did these brakes stop freezing on a cold winter day?
They don't stop freezing. But they didn't freeze. It didn't freeze because it was a cold winter day. It probably froze because it was a snowy or wet winter day.
Okay.
Because the cold itself will not make it freeze.
But it is possible to use your emergency brake or your handbrake on a cold and wet day and have it not freeze. There are millions of people that do this.
Mm-hmm. What?
But how bad was it? Did you actually catch the car before it smashed into anything?
But there was another car in front of it. I mean, it was so weird because I looked out the window and I didn't see it moving at all.
Well, the reason your car lurched down the hill, first of all, putting it in reverse is always the correct thing to do. Your friend who said the gear ratios get bigger as you go from fifth to fourth to third to second is correct.
Right.
And it becomes more mechanically disadvantageous for the car to push the engine down the hill, which is what you're asking it to do.
Right.
You're asking the car to turn the engine over, to turn
right.
the pistons.
Right.
Okay, and you make it more and more difficult as you go down the gears, and the most disadvantageous gear is reverse.
Uh-huh.
Right. And you can sort of tell this because when you start off in first gear, you can tell by the sound of the engine more or less what the gear ratio is. And you'll notice that the sound keeps getting gruntier and gruntier as you go from second to first. And then in reverse, it's really...
That's the way your transmission sounds. Mine doesn't sound like that. So reverse is obviously the gear of choice whether you're facing up the hill or down.
That's right.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yes.
It doesn't matter what direction the car is headed.
Because it just makes the engine turn backwards, which is just as
right.
difficult.
What you want is the most mechanically disadvantaged situation in reverse gear, unequivocally, in all cars since day one, is that.
And you should always point your tires toward the curb.
Yes,
whether they're new or not. Because think about it. If your car started to roll away, would you really care if you chewed the tires up?
No, you're right.
So what, most important of all, you should use the parking brake when you park. And the reason that you can't rely on this little peanut of an engine to hold your car in a steep hill is because it's a peanut of an engine.
Yes, I know.
Right.
And that's why you need the emergency brake, and it was exacerbated by the fact that it was cold.
Okay.
Because the fact that it was cold made the engine's ability to hold it by the compression it generates diminished.
Ooh, this could be a puzzler.
It was once.
This is a very powerful. Okay. Yeah.
It is.
It's going to take me a long time to digest.
Yeah.
My notes.
Actually, I mean,
I would avoid hills altogether.
I can't do that. So parking in neutral with the parking brake on is not the right thing to do at any time.
Well, it would be the right thing to do if you were on a really flat, level, parallel parking situation. You could do that. But it's a good idea to get into the habit of putting it into gear all the time. Otherwise, you'll forget.
Right.
Forget what?
Huh?
See you, Inga. Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Bye. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, this is Matt from Arlington, Virginia.
Hey, Matt. Have we spoken before?
No, I don't think so.
Boy, your voice had a familiar ring to it. Maybe it was your phone call that had a familiar ring.
Well, I have a 1988 Acura Integra.
Yeah.
Well, my brother and I decided that we would go ahead and change out the timing belt. It's been about 70,000 since the timing belt was changed out.
Uh-huh.
My brother had just done his Camry, which has a single overhead cam, and I didn't realize that was going to be a problem. But we got to working on my car, and this was the weekend of Mother's Day. It was Saturday. He told me it'd only take a half a day, and we were...
They're still working on it.
We're still working on it. In fact, we got the car to start.
But it runs like doo-doo, huh?
It runs really, really rough.
Is the check engine light on?
No.
It should be.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
The RPMs kind of fluctuate up and down, and it almost sounds like a diesel.
Don't run it one more second. It may already be too late.
Well, I mean, Mother's Day was a long time ago.
The problem was on the pulley, it looked like there was two sets of markings. There was these three ticks, and then there were two ticks, and we decided to go where the three were. And when we lined it up, it's not running properly.
Well, you guys made the classic rookie mistake. You walked the guy with the bases loaded. Well, you screwed up, I'm sure. And I know this because I've screwed these up exactly the same way. This thing has a dual overhead cam.
Yeah, don't I know it.
Yeah.
And what happened is you didn't get the right amount of tension on the non-tensioner side of the belt. In other words, the belt comes up one side,
okay,
goes around one of those cam sprockets,
okay,
goes across the top.
And across the other one.
Around the other one, and then comes back and where the tensioner is.
Right.
That belt, from the point at which I started mentioning it, runs from the crankshaft up to the cam, the first cam. That's going to be as tight can be. And all the slack has to be where the tensioner is. And what happened when you tensioned this thing is you moved one of the cams.
Oh.
Because you had slop on the wrong side.
Okay.
So when it tightens up, it moves one of the gears.
So now you're off a tooth.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So maybe both of the cams is not timed.
And that's why
properly.
It's running lousy, because your valve timing is off. So you have valves that are opening when they shouldn't be and closing when they shouldn't be. And
But they're close.
But they're close.
But bottom line, did I do permanent damage, I guess, is the big question.
This
unlikely.
Is one of those cases where close is not good enough. It just isn't good enough.
Okay.
But I think what you need to do... if I'm not mistaken, if you take the valve cover off of this thing, there are two holes on the cam that you can put drill bits into to lock those two cam sprockets so that they won't turn.
Okay.
And of course, you got to remember to take the drill bits out before you start it. But assuming you can remember to do that, then that locks those two sprockets so that now you can put the belt on and not have to worry about stuff jumping around.
Okay.
But don't be surprised if it takes you a few more tries to get this done. And once you do get it set, you want to just put the crank pulley on the bottom.
Right.
And run the engine for a few seconds.
Okay.
Shut it off and check to see if everything is still, if the marks line up.
Right.
If they do, and you'll know right away that you did it right, because it'll run like a dream.
Okay.
Assuming you didn't bend any valves.
Yeah.
Who talked you into doing this? Your brother, huh?
Well, he did, because he had such great success with the Camry, so.
Listen, man, I'm going to give you a piece of advice that should stay with you for your entire life. Don't
ever
get talked into anything
by your brother
anymore. Can you repeat that?
Don't ever get talked into anything by my brother anymore.
There you go.
Is he an older brother or a younger brother?
Well, he's an older brother.
There you go.
More so.
That's the problem.
Matt. Bless you, my son.
Well, thank you very much.
But may you walk in front of the elephant in the procession of life.
But just tell me, did you have fun doing it?
Well, we did have a lot of fun. It was kind of a bonding experience.
Exactly. A bondo experience. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, we'll take the cylinder head off. We'll really bond you two together. See you later.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Hey, it's time for us to take a short break. You know that?
Yeah, I hope I have time to jot down my highlights from this week's show so far. You know, from my memoirs.
Okay, and then what are you going to do with the other 59 seconds?
We'll be back with more of your calls in just a minute.
I drive my baby crazy the way that I drive. It's the only way I know how to stay alive. If I was forced to take the bus, I'd probably die. I use 30 weight for my hair cream, and my aftershave is gasoline. I got a Ford and a Chevy and a Continental, a two of my own and one's a rental. I'm saving on my cash for a two-tone 55. I got an MFA and a PhD, and a lot of good that they're doing for me, 'cause all I ever wanted to do in my life was drive.
And even though NPR's president gets out his magnifying glass and takes another desperate look at the fine print on our contract whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from the American Jewish World Service, working together for more than 30 years to build a more just and equitable world. Learn more at ajws.org.
This message comes from NPR and Car Talk sponsor CarMax. Finding the right car takes time, and with the new Love Your Car guarantee from CarMax, you can take your time to make sure you found the perfect car for you. Starting with a 24-hour test drive, drive it to work, school, and the grocery store before you buy, and if it feels right, you've got a full month and 1,500 miles to keep on driving with their new 30-day money-back guarantee. Learn more at the new Love Your Car guarantee from CarMax at CarMax.com.
We're back.
Don't scare me like that.
You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and the new Puzzler.
The new semi-automotive, or automotive-ish.
Yeah.
Automotive-ish.
Yeah. This was, the inspiration for this was sent in by someone named Warner Granati, I think.
It was just the inspiration.
Or Grenade. I can't tell you exactly how it's pronounced. And of course, I had to add some.
Of course.
You know. Yeah. Fuscatory details to it.
Some color, some interest.
Yeah, and I have to personalize it a little bit.
Of course.
Now, some of you may remember our nephew Matt, who we called Pork Chop Boy. He was actually featured on our website when we first launched the site, and he was called Pork Chop Boy because his social life was so bad that he had to tie a pork chop around the neck even to get the dog to play with him. Nobody really liked him. But anyway...
Nobody likes, still doesn't like him.
Including his wife. Anyway, some years ago, he dislocated his right shoulder playing chess. It was strip chess, actually. But we
don't have to go into that.
and it hurt so much that he couldn't move the shifter on his automatic transmission, and he tried to reach over and shift
with the other hand,
but twisting in the seat, that hurt even more. So, but he needed to drive to work every day, and he didn't have any way to get there. And Tommy said, "Oh, no problem, you can use my car."
Yeah.
And he did, and he had no problem driving Tommy's car to work. Yet he couldn't shift his own automatic transmission car. And the question is, which one of Tommy's jalopies did Matt use to get to work, and why? Now, if you think you know the answer, write it on the back of a $20 bill and send it to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238.
Or you can email us your answer from cartalk.com.
But right now, if you have a question about your car or anything else, the number to call is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Rachel from Chicago.
Hi, Rachel from Chicago. What's up?
Well, I have a Saab 1987 SPG with a turbo. And on the first hot day of the season, I got in the car and turned the air conditioner on and drove it for half an hour. And then I parked the car and let it sit for about 2 hours. I got back in the car, let it idle for 20 minutes, while I pigged out and listened to the radio with the air conditioner on. And then I started driving, and after a few blocks, it started making this sound. And I turned the air conditioner off right away.
Yeah.
And I drove the car for a couple more blocks, turned the air conditioner back on, and after about a minute or two, the same sound. And I turned the air conditioner off right away, and I drove right to my mechanic because this had happened last year also, the same thing, but I didn't have the sense to turn the air conditioner off last year, so the sound continued, and eventually the car lost all its verve. It didn't have any pickup, and last year the mechanic said, oh, it has nothing to do with the air conditioner. Your alternator belts are shot. They have to be replaced.
And it was making the same kind of noise last year?
Yes. This year I drove to the shop and I said, I know it's related to the air conditioner. And so he had me idle with the hood open.
Yeah.
And while I was idling with the air conditioner on, no cold air was coming out anymore. And eventually, after about a minute or two, the sound started again.
Yeah.
And I turned it off right away and he said, yes, it's your compressor.
Yeah.
And I want to believe him, but I wasn't completely confident.
And it's the same noise.
Yes.
Yeah, do the noise.
With maybe a high pitch happening at the same time.
Oh, I feel it. I feel your pain. I know where you're coming from.
I'm with you.
I feel your pain, baby.
Thank you for commiserating. Can you help me?
Well, last year when he said it was
the belt.
I think there were two belts that run the alternator on this car.
Mm-hmm.
That he could have been right. And he could also be right that it's the compressor this time, because when it was the belts, I know you're not going to like this, Rachel.
Okay.
Yeah.
The noise you were hearing was slippage. You were hearing the belts slide along the pulleys.
Hmm.
Okay, making a kind of screeching, squealing noise.
Yes. Oh, that's good.
That's the noise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When the compressor stopped working, the belts which drive the alternator and the compressor, I believe they're the same belts, were also slipping on the compressor pulley and making that same noise. See, last year when it happened, even though you had the noise, the air conditioner still worked.
Cold air was coming out, right?
Maybe.
And now cold air isn't coming out.
So, then we have,
so
now
then
what?
We have.
It's going to cost
you. We have
you.
A mechanic who probably properly and correctly diagnosed the problem both times. And you have lost faith in him because he told you it had nothing to do with the air conditioning, and you, your experience, and you are perfectly justified in saying, look, in both cases it was related in time to the use of the air conditioner. It made perfect sense for you to believe that it was related to the air conditioner, and in fact, it was, but not in the way that you think, if my brother is right.
See,
which he has been.
See, you're taking two unconnected things here, and you're putting a connection between them. And this is the way we get ourselves in trouble every week.
Yeah, so
okay.
Are you interested in doing the show with us?
I'm looking for a job, yes.
Yeah, you made a very logical connection, except I think in this case we'll have to exonerate your mechanic.
Okay.
I've always had the problem that air conditioning and Saabs just shouldn't go together.
Really?
I mean, Saab owners are sort of free-spirited people, and the idea that they have to be pampered with air conditioning has never been congruous. It was always an incongruous kind of thing for me.
Really?
Especially an 87 Saab. I mean, don't you visualize an 87 Saab being driven by some very...
Some sweaty individual.
Yeah, free-spirited
wearing,
person with a beard,
wearing
probably.
Wearing Birkenstocks.
Do you have a beard, Rachel?
Do you own Birkenstocks?
I have a lot of Birkenstocks.
She has Birkenstocks, see?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that it's incongruous that you should also have air conditioning. It makes no sense to me, and I think the Saab is rebelling against the very thought of air conditioning in it.
I'll take that under advisement.
See you later, Rachel.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, this is Brian from Sausalito, California.
What's up, Brian?
Well, I have a hobby. It's a 1960 F100.
Uh-huh.
And I just replaced the engine. And most of the parts have been replaced, but kingpins are next.
Uh-huh.
can I put sway bars or something like that on a leaf spring suspension?
Can you?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so.
Are there any tricks to make that thing handle like a Dodge Viper?
Yeah.
They would be tricks, too.
No, yeah, you take the body off.
Why would you want it to handle like that? I mean, part of the charm of a vehicle like this is experiencing the poor handling and the unpredictability of it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the excitement of driving a truck like this.
You're never going to get this thing to handle like a Viper, nor would you want to anyway.
No, but can I? What can I do to help it out a little bit?
What's wrong with it? You mean it like wanders all over the road?
Right.
Well, the kingpins are going to help that.
You got a problem with that?
The kingpins will help that, and then. But I'd like to flatten it out a little bit. I don't want to modify it too much, but something simple like sway bars or.
Well, a steering damper might help.
A steering damper, okay.
Ah.
And a steering damper is like a shock absorber that will go between the chassis and part of the steering linkage. And I can't say that I'm familiar enough with an F-100 steering linkage, but it probably just has a steering box and a tie rod.
So it's about the same as a Model T.
Yeah, so you may be able to put this thing, which would damp oscillations or unwanted motions of the steering wheel before they telegraphed up to your, of the wheels rather, before they telegraphed up to your steering wheel.
But I mean, but this is a basic characteristic of all vehicles of that era. Even when they were brand new, they did not track as beautifully as modern-day cars track.
It's fine until I get in mountain roads.
Yeah, well, part of you probably have a lot of wear in a lot of different pieces. I mean, you say you're going to replace the kingpins, but what about the tie rods? What about the steering box? All that stuff gets a little bit of slop in it a little at a time. So, and then it all adds up, and you find yourself swaying all over the road.
Here's what you loosen the adjustment nut on the steering box, and you crank that screw down as far as it'll go. So you can't turn the wheel.
And see what happens.
Now, here's a couple of things that might help. Gas shocks would help.
Okay.
Radial tires will help.
Uh-huh.
Now, they're going to tell you that you can't put radial tires on this thing.
Yeah, pay no attention to them.
I already put those on.
Good. They're going to work.
They didn't help, right?
Yeah, they helped.
Oh, no, they help.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about it, I think.
And I would replace all the tie rod ends, just for the heck of it. If you could buy all new stuff for that front end, a new pitman arm, new center link, all that junk, I would replace it all. It'll cost you a few $100.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll make a tremendous difference in the handling.
Won't help at all.
It'll be great.
Save your money.
Yeah, and then tighten up all those loose wheel bearings. And it will never be great, but it'll be good enough.
Don't go crazy replacing parts that aren't worn out, as my brother suggests, because there will be such a minuscule improvement in the handling.
I disagree. Disagree!
That you won't even notice it. If stuff's worn out, replace it, but put a good set of expensive gas shocks in there and hope for the best.
And
see you, Brian.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Bye-bye. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Stephanie, and I'm calling from New York City.
Hi.
This is my question. I'm graduating from medical school in New York, and I'm starting my residency next month in California. I want to drive my 1990 Toyota Corolla with 125,000 miles on it out west, and I wanted to know what you think would be the best route for me to take across the country that would give me the best chance of making it.
What is this, MapQuest?
I wasn't sure if I should take the southern route to avoid the mountains, which would be longer, or if I should take the shorter, most direct route through the mountains, which would be harder on my car.
Well, you've got all summer to make it, right?
Oh, no. I have about, 2 weeks.
2 weeks?
Yeah.
When are you leaving?
Like, next week.
Next week?
Yeah.
Well, that's a good question, actually, because you do have... The southern route is easier in terms of altitudes.
Right.
Climbing hills.
Right.
But on the other hand, it's hot.
Exactly.
Have you considered the northern route?
Well, what's the northern route?
Over the pole.
Through Saskatchewan.
Yeah.
Do you think that would be the best route?
The Alcan Highway.
Well, geez, I don't know there are lots of ways you can get, it depends on also what you want to see. I mean, you're not going to just blast straight through.
Right.
There are plenty of things to see along the way.
Yeah, you've been working for a long time. If you only have 2 weeks,
right.
I would say have a good time.
Yeah,
And I would, you may not have a good time for a long time.
I would go right across the Rockies. I would take the straight route and try to catch, you know, Rocky Mountain National Park.
Do you think my car would make it, though?
Of course not, but the bus goes right through there.
I mean, I would love to. I love the Rockies. They're beautiful.
Yeah, no, I think you should go across the Rockies because you're not going to get to see them for another few years. You're going to have your nose to the grindstone.
That is true.
Here's what you got to do, though.
Okay.
You got a lot of miles on this car.
Yes.
You've got to take it to a good mechanic.
Yeah, I have one in mind.
Excellent. Have him check everything out. Make sure you don't have tie rod ends that are ready to fall off, belts that are ready to break, hoses that are ready to explode.
Any tires that are questionable, ditch them.
Right.
You're going to need four really good tires.
Okay.
So you got to...
And a good spare.
Do that. And that's the first piece of advice I'd give you.
Okay.
And the second piece of advice would be, take it easy. Don't be in a hurry.
Right.
So instead of driving at 75 miles an hour on the freeways and highways and byways, drive at 55 miles an hour. The car will appreciate it.
Okay.
Because you'll never get there at 50 miles an hour.
Yeah, but you'll see more.
And also, if I go over 70, my car kind of shakes a lot anyway.
Yeah, well, you're going to get that fixed also before you leave.
Yeah, whatever's causing that, you have to
fix. Yeah, that could be a bad tire or a ball joint or something. But make sure the car is checked thoroughly for safety. Make sure they check the belts and hoses, and especially your cooling system.
Okay.
Because when you start climbing them mountains,
right,
it's going to overheat.
Right.
Yeah, no, you'll make it.
And if you think so?
No, not really, but, you know, you should be hopeful.
Yeah, I just don't want it to die on me because I need it.
Yeah, no, I understand.
I know. Well, that's...
Have you led a good, clean life?
Yeah.
I ain't got no time for anything else, right?
Exactly.
No, you'll make it. But I think Tommy's advice is important.
Okay.
To heed, in that you should really take it slow.
Take it slow.
Because
okay.
If you and there's a temptation to go like crazy because between New York City and Denver, now we're gonna get a lot of flack for this. We don't think there's a heck of a lot to see.
What do you mean? What about York, Pennsylvania? So. Places like that.
Well, I'm gonna stop by Rochester because that's where I'm from. And then I'm going to go through St. Louis. That's all I know.
Oh, yeah. Well, you'll stop at the obligatory visit to the Arch and then just floor it after that. Have a wonderful trip, Stephanie, and send us a postcard.
I will.
Especially if you don't make it.
Okay.
See you later.
Thank you very much.
I wish you the best.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's happened again. You've blown off another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are David the Calves of Belleville Green and Catherine Frau Blucher Fenelosa. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare, assisted by Connie Bridgeford. Our theme music is by David Dog Grisman, and our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from his annual pre-bathing suit season, fried clams, fried dough, fried chicken, fry offers, and Diet Coke blowout, Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Marge Inovera. Our customer care representative is Haywood Jabuzoff. Our arbitration expert is Viola Fuss. Our personal makeup artist is Bud Tugley. The director of our Alpine Choir is Ole Olehi. Our locksmith is Eustace Nailfile. Our chicken soup provisioner is Kent Hoyt. Our eBay specialist is Selma Junkoff. Our Russian chauffeur is Peekoff and Dropoff. And our seat cushion tester is Mike Easter. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the Homeland Security agents posing as honey-roasted nut vendors in Harvard Square, as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. Don't drive like my brother.
Don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, download other migraine-inducing episodes, and check out our clothing and best-of collections all over at cartalk.com. Also this week at cartalk.com, we're here to help you clean up your driveway. Got an old car that's seen better days? Well, the Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program will tow it away for free and send the proceeds to the NPR station of your choice. Do it now before your local neighborhood watch group labels your car an eyesore and plants geraniums in it. Turn your car into the programs you love. Find out how at cartalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though skunks turn up their noses whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.